Neon Genesis Evangelion is Greek, and what it literally means is new first book gospel. So, first book of the new gospel. What that means is not that it's a religious text per se, although there are a lot of religious references in there, but I think that what Anno and Gainax were attempting to convey was the idea that this is serving the purpose of a gospel, or to use the works of Joseph Campbell as a reference, it's a cultural myth that is designed to guide us down a specific path. In this case, what we're looking at is what Campbell defines as the classic hero myth, in which a protagonist is pulled from a safe, secure environment and forced to go through a series of tragedies and triumphs that forces him to develop into a final being who is complete, who is whole. And Ava follows that pattern almost exactly. We begin with a character who is very incomplete and moves steadily in an orchestrated series of progressions towards finding his placement both as a personal being and within society. And what Ava is really about, when you get right down to it, is it's finding that complement that none of us actually have. It's about finding the rest of us that's out there.
Well, art is really to explore the human condition, and the human condition inevitably is suffering. We use art to deal with the complexities of life, and many of these complexities arrive from, childhood becoming, becoming an adult. And what we have in Evangelion is a story of several 14-year-olds who are basically growing up, and their harsh childish realities are becoming harsh adult realities, their inequities, and it's being represented with robots, the end of the world, technology as an analogy to what's going on in their lives. Keep in mind, Shinji and Asuka basically learn to dance. Shinji is forced to accept other people's friendship through conflict with the fourth angel, the second we see. He basically grows in his relationships with Suzuhara, etc. So we see that most of the show is basically the growth of Shinji as an individual, just as any child would grow up, any 14-year-old would go, anything the 14-year-old would go through, except kind of pushed to the ultimate, where his choices are the choices that will guide the rest of humanity, the choices that will save the world or let it die. And this is how an egocentric 14-year-old would feel. They don't understand the entire world, and they only understand their small bit.
The first thing to remember is that the entire series of Ava, up to the last two episodes, is actually a flashback or a dream or something to that effect. It's all actually taking place in Shinji's mind. Now, are these events that really happened, that he's going over and over again? Is this some kind of dream analog that he's come up with to represent his situation? We don't know, and ultimately it's really not important to understanding the show to know which it is. Perhaps all the world is indeed a stage, and we're just players, which is, of course, the analogy in the last two episodes. What is important is that Shinji is sitting there mentally reviewing all of the data that's been input to him at this point in time, because there is going to come a point, although he is not consciously aware of it at first, where he is going to have to make certain decisions and come to certain realizations. And the deadline for this is becoming one, becoming whole with those around him, or simply not, in which case the consequences are obviously rather dire. And what he's going through changes in your perspective. If you watch Ava all the way through once and then go back and watch it again, this is one of the trickiest things in doing the English language version. So many of the scenes, so many of the specific lines have double meanings. First time through, they seem to mean one thing. With the knowledge that you have getting through the later episodes, going back and watching those earlier episodes, suddenly, oh, that didn't mean what I thought it did. We took the logical assumption, but that wasn't what was actually necessarily going on. But when you're watching Ava for the first time, you are, like Shinji, basically a tabula rasa, a blank slate upon which all this information is being imprinted.
We have Shinji basically starting as a blank slate. Nothing defines him. His father brings him to Nerve, and his father says, "Grow up, be a man, accept your responsibilities. You may suffer, but that's part of life. Deal with it, or go away." And go away in this case is kind of a thing saying, "Well, go kind of do a kind of an introverted suicide type thing in a psychological sort of way. Just become non-existent in the world." Become non-existent in the world. He has to go through this difficult process of growing up, and the thing that inevitably gets Shinji to start this journey is he sees a damsel in distress. Granted, we now know much more about Rei than we saw in the first episode. Basically, he saw the female form, and this, like many other stories, is the inciting incident that brings Shinji inevitably into the story and gets him to start acting. And he realizes that, you know, there is a little bit more outside of his shell, but he's still very afraid of what's there.
Fear. Fear is ultimately the act of a living being attempting to preserve itself. Fear is there because if we do not fear, we do not resist that which could destroy us. Again, referencing Campbell. Campbell, in The Power of Myth, references a wonderful story in which the deity being discussed basically comes into being. And the first words are, "I am." And the second one, words to come, "I am afraid." This is where Shinji is. Shinji is in a situation where he must develop, and if he cannot do it on his own, something must be done to force him to develop. In the context of Ava, his levels that he has to pass, the things he needs to accept, are represented by the angels. They are the instruments by which he can achieve the goal of becoming truly human. Hence, the Human Instrumentality Project.
Look at it as the reluctant messiah that Shinji, the issue Shinji's dealing with at the moment. Shinji's basically told, go out, suffer, save the world. And he doesn't want to. Look at the way facial is designed. Spurs coming from the palms of the hands. Stigmata. The cross-shaped explosions. Basically, a Christ-like figure, the giving back the sins of the world, in a way. And this is how Shinji feels. So Shinji is basically confronting his issue at the moment, the bit he needs to outgrow to, get closer to becoming a man.
What we're looking at is the use of the imagery and what it immediately brings to mind as a tool for the viewer to be brought into what Shinji is experiencing, to see it but not to completely understand why it is there. If you think of it as a Rorschach test for the viewer, it's like, oh, I saw that. I don't know why I saw that. And then you start thinking, why did I see that? And you're pulled along the same path as Shinji.
we see in the battle after after every unit one is injured, goes berserk. Its right eye is pierced, which if we use the symbolism of Kabbalah, the left side is the get my head backwards. It's the left eye, isn't it? It's the left eye is pierced. See, I always remember that part with the reflection, and it screws me up every time. During the battle, every unit one's left eye is pierced by the spur, the stigmata, the sins of the world. And in the Kabbalah symbolism, basically the left side is it's the arm of shields. It's the strength of your past. It's the strength of your heritage. It's what you draw upon. And on your right it's the arm of swords. It's the arm of attack. It's the thing you use to create your future. So basically, Shinji has lost, the past. All he has is attack. It's kind of like all he has is instinct. All he has is destructive power. It doesn't have the balancing force.
This is why Shinji reacts with such horror when he sees the eye reflected back at him. It's just not the realization that, oh my gosh, he's in a giant monster. On the sub-level, he's seeing the fact that he has lost everything that existed before. Irrevocably.
Now, notice his left arm is also injured. Again, adding to that, once going berserk, see what he does to the angel. Rips off a rib. And what is the rib? In Old Testament, what Eve was created from. So takes this and starts bashing the core of Satiel, basically using the symbol of woman to attack the heart of it, the source of this of Satiel's power. And Satiel, rather than be destroyed by this, destroys itself and tries to destroy everything else with it, much like an overly dramatic failed relationship may end up. So you see Shinji's issues with women already there. It's foreshadowing what happens between him and Asuka later in throughout the show. But basically, Shinji overcomes this reluctant messiah complex, and he's more comfortable, but he's complacent. He says, "I do it because it's my job." At this point, he doesn't do it because he personally feels value in it. He does it because he thinks he has to. So this is like another layer in what the Messiah must do. The Messiah must suffer. The Messiah must internalize. Must accept this. The Savior must accept the fate he has dealt.
This is really rather the core of what Ava is about in the end. That it is about coming to grips with the fact that one is only part of something that is larger. And just as in so many myths and the Old Testament itself, woman is portrayed as the antithesis of man. Now, whether you say, okay, Eve caused Adam to be thrown out of the Garden of Eden, and whether you say that was intentional or she was misled, what it really comes down to is that there is, within society of a whole, a great distrust of the other half. If you are female, there is a distrust of the male. If you are male, there is a distrust of the female. Shinji, being male, is starting to realize that woman is not exactly what he thinks it should be, And it's no coincidence that he is at the age to be going through puberty. And as we go into the next series of angels, we start to realize that we are going through basically human sexual development.
The second angel we see, the fourth angel, Shamshel, basically, if you look at it, you can say it is a phallic shape. You can look at it as he's dealing with masculine issues at this point. And he's trying, in being introverted, he is keeping his pain inside, and he ends up letting Toji and Kensuke into his entry plug, his kind of the way into his inner child, therefore showing his fragility, showing his humanity and his weakness to other people. So basically, he develops these friendships in the most extreme way, graphically for the viewer, but basically it's the same process you go to. You basically open up to your friends, and that's who your friends are, somebody you trust. And we see all the angels kind of follow either the personal growth of Shinji or later the forces of the world that Shinji must deal with.
Yeah, it is phallic. It's a very phallic alien form. And, of course, that's something that has a great connotation in most cultures, in which the snake is frequently seen as the instrument of, if not evil, of disruption. The serpent appears in so many cultures as that which comes into a placid environment and causes a change. And, of course, the serpent in human sexuality is capable of a change, which Shinji is now at the age of achieving, but he doesn't understand why it is doing this, or for what purpose exactly. And so initially, he has to understand this aspect of himself, what it is that makes him like other men, what is it that makes him like his father, and then what is it that makes him not like Misato, not like Rei. And ultimately, as she's introduced, not like Asuka, who is in almost every respect his opposite.
The fifth and sixth angels, the third and fourth that we see, kind of represent Shinji learning a little bit more about women in a way. He's forced to trust someone else, in this case, somebody very different than himself, where Toji is, you know, inevitably just another guy, you know, as simple as Shinji would think of it. A person can be. He has to put his trust in Rei and see how Rei sacrifices. Kind of starts looking at Rei's relationship to Gendo, and all this brings together a moment of closeness between Rei and Shinji, where Shinji is forced to look at Rei as another entity. And then when Asuka is introduced, he sees a completely different side of woman. He sees the fiery redhead, energetic and dangerous. And what does she do? She basically dresses him up in her clothing, puts her in her entry plug, and brings her into her inner child in a way, into the AO Unit 2, and shows a remarkable amount of openness to him. And he doesn't know what to think originally, but you know he definitely enjoys it. And it basically is the harbinger of Shinji's, you know, understanding of like another 14-year-old girl that's kind of like he is, where Rei is very complacent and kind of a overly simplified mother figure, you know, just as if all her definition is in duty, and it's kind of Rei is simple and in a way non-sexual, where Asuka, you know, definitely has more fieriness to her. So
And immediately after that battle, we have Ritsuko and Masato saying, geez, we sure learned a lot about the enemy today, didn't we? Well, I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically the thrust of what they said. And you can kind of say that that's a little bit of Shinji talking.
Rei and Asuka, the polar opposites. Rei in the white plug suit, the blue hair, almost a nimbus-like effect, halo, caused by the sensor unit she wears in her hair. Asuka, dressed in red. Her hoo-hoos, as we call them, the little red units on her head that she never, ever doesn't wear, look like horns. It's two sides of the female that Shinji hasn't really thought about before. When he falls on Rei in her apartment and his hand touches her breast, we see elsewhere the images of the mother holding the child to the breast. Suddenly the dichotomy is introduced that this creature which nurtures and protects is something else. But Rei is not quite complete. He doesn't know why, but there's something about Rei that simply does not compute. Asuka, on the other hand, immediately sets up a reaction that, who is she? How dare she? And yet, inevitably, he finds himself being pulled along in the scheme. Asuka is a true complex individual, whereas Rei, and this may explain a lot of her popularity as a character, is in many ways a fantasy figure, completely compliant, willing to do whatever you ask, whatever the personal cost.
Israfel, the seventh angel, is the one that is made famous because it required coordinated dancing to overcome it. So this basically is an analogy to a 14-year-old girl and a 14-year-old boy learning to dance at the school's dance function, and it's just again pushed to the extreme limit in symbolism. So we see the complexity of what's going on, where Rei is interfacing with Shinji better. Asuka has a certain amount of jealousy, and it creates a social dynamic that a 14-year-old, you know, discovers. Well, you know, when you enter high school, it's a whole new world, and it's kind of introducing that.
And let's not forget what dancing really is in the end. It's a physical metaphor for another physical act performed by two people, male, female bodies interacting in rhythmic pulses. There is no doubt that for the first time, Shinji is really starting to think about that aspect of the human condition. And by being forced into the situation where he must synchronize exactly with Asuka, he is hitting a new level in his own self-conception. It's also really important to note a couple of other things. For example, the fact that Rei drops into synchronization with Shinji perfectly. There is absolutely no problem. And yet it is decided that Asuka should be the one to do it. Well, why is this? This is because Rei, again, is not really truly what he needs, to bring back the masturbation concept. She is the fantasy, but the fantasy does not actually fulfill in the flesh what the true flesh can deliver. Also, keep in mind that in this episode, one becomes two. The alien splits into two, and then the two, Shinji and Asuka, must become one in the dance in order to bring things back about. So it's a complex metaphor. in which the end product, destroying the angel, the Big Bang, is literally orchestrated by the outside elements, in this case Misato, basically saying, look, this is what you have to do in order to go to this step. So he's being pushed again along the process of, you've got to be ready for this when it happens.
Xenophon, the eighth angel, kind of represents where Asuka develops a little bit more trust for Shinji. Shinji actively helps her, and we have the famous thermal expansion line. So we see that Asuka is kind of flirting with Shinji much more, and you see that there's a strong relationship growing between the two, albeit extremely complicated. The eighth angel basically brings that about.
It's also interesting in that after the previous episode, in which Asuka and Shinji had to work together in order to accomplish a goal, that now there is both a feeling of more assurance in each other's abilities, but at the same time, an increasing anxiety about where this is going. When Shinji is by the pool, and Asuka is doing her homework, a great deal is made by her about how much more advanced in school than he is. And at the same time, she takes advantage of the situation to draw attention to her own sexuality. And we're looking at this point of, where is the state of attraction between these two characters? Because on the surface, they do not seem to like each other very much, and yet they have been forced to cohabitate together. They have been basically living under one roof for quite a while now, doing the same job. They are essentially bound, even though there is not anything legal about it. In other words, it's a steady relationship. They're dating steadily, like it or not.